This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You're listening to the Momwell Podcast. Today, I am excited to welcome Zach Watson to the show. Zach is the creator of Real Zach ThinkShare, an invisible load educator for men. Zach makes educational videos and content to improve men's awareness and understanding of mental load, emotional labor, decision fatigue, domestic labor, and equitable partnering. And it's refreshing to see someone focusing on the partner piece. After all, it isn't just the weight of the invisible load that feels so heavy. It's also a feeling of being unseen and unappreciated. When it comes to the invisible load, it is so common for us to blame our partners for not pulling their weight. And if you feel unvalued and resentful, I want you to know that I totally get it. Your feelings are valid, and you don't deserve to carry a mental load you never intentionally opted into. But I also want us all to remember that our partner is not the problem. I believe that while there are partners out there who might not be willing to share in the labor, most of the time, our partners are actually just battling their own expectations and gender norms. And often these norms have kept them from seeing and understanding the labor we are carrying. But if we can get to the root of the problem and work together, we can share the invisible load. Today, Zach and I unpack the difference in standards for men and women and how this has contributed to him becoming so visible in this space. We talk about the reasons why the invisible load often falls to moms and why partners fall into a passive role, as well as why decision-making often feels like so much mental labor. And we discuss the pressures and norms dads face and how we can all break away from expectations and take an active role in decision-making and the invisible load. Before jumping in, I'd like to share an endorsement of my upcoming book that dives into this complex topic of the invisible load. The book is called Releasing the Mother Load: How to Carry Less and Enjoy Motherhood More, and it comes out on April 9th. Here's what Dr. Becky Kennedy, creator of Good Inside, had to say. Releasing the mother load highlights the way that parenting and specifically mothering has changed in recent decades, and even more drastically since the pandemic. Erica Jossa shines the light on the invisible load and how big of an impact it has on maternal health, and she also provides practical insights for how to release that load and how to protect our self-esteem and well-being. Thank you so much, Dr. Becky, for your kind words. You can pre-order your copy of the book today at Erica Jossa to access special pre-sale bonuses. That's E-R-I-C-A-D-J-O-S-S-A to claim your pre-sale bonuses. Now let's hear my conversation with Zach Watson. Welcome to the Momwell Podcast, where we're committed to helping you cope with the load of motherhood. I'm your host, registered psychotherapist, and founder of Momwell, Erica Jossa. At Momwell, we know that motherhood is hard, but care shouldn't be. We're committed to providing you with knowledge, tools, and support to navigate the challenges of motherhood. Our mission is to put moms back on the priority list and empower them to create a mental wellness toolbox free from judgment, fear, and shame. On the show, we'll be discussing topics such as postpartum depression, identity loss, the mental load of motherhood, and more. We'll be joined by experts, moms, and professionals who can offer advice, practical tips, relatable stories, and honest conversations. Here at Momwell, we believe that when a mom is well, a baby is well. So join us as we discuss the topics that matter to you with experts who get it. Together, we can redefine motherhood and change the way moms are treated. Zach, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I feel like a TikTok algorithm knows how to sniff me out these days. I find all kinds of cool people. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Welcome, Matt. Super honored to be here.
I'm so interested in how your platform formed and developed, because what you do or went to school for or like employment to your platform now and what you teach and talk about are kind of like two different things, is my understanding, right? Mm-hmm. So can you help me understand how you got into this invisible load, fair play, division of labor space? Because I'm so curious.
Sure. This could be a hour and a half answer, but I think I can cut it to about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
In college, I was in engineering, went into a software development job, and then 2 years later, moved into teaching. I taught for 8 years, math, science, special ed. And then when our baby came along in 2021, I realized I needed remote work. And I think the pandemic was really a blessing for our family that all these new remote openings started to exist. That was part of what I feel like is the great exodus of teachers in 2020, 2021. So I took 4 months of paternity leave about. I had been on TikTok for about the past 9 months, talking about sort of personal development and my general experience as a teacher, as a human, as a someone trying to better myself. And I'd made another 2,000 videos before that on YouTube about random stuff to engage my students a bit more. And then, you know, when I became a dad, I just started kind of trying to vulnerably share about my experience as a father. There are a couple different topics that people really resonated with in those early months. First one being that I wore a weight vest along with I was sober along with my wife during pregnancy. I know that a lot of people saw that and were like shook by the idea. The other thing I talked about was how scared I was that I did not immediately fall in love with our newborn. I am a crybaby in many ways. We watched A Wonderful Life every year for Christmas, and I'm crying at least 5 times throughout that movie. But when our daughter came out, nothing. I was fully expecting like just a wet face for the next 6 hours, and there was nothing. And I honestly thought I was like a sociopath underneath it all. And I was like, what's wrong with me? I know that that was like a really huge, I think 72 different people stitched that video when it came out. So I think those two things. And then I made one other video talking about how, so my newborn was crying. And I said, the hard part about this is not the fact that she's crying and me trying to soothe her. It's knowing that my wife really wants to breastfeed. And her expectation is that if I can't soothe her in the next 5, 6, 7 minutes, that I need to go wake her up so that she can feed her. And so the hard part is knowing that I have to go wake my wife up when she's only been sleeping for 45 minutes and she hasn't had connected 3 hours of sleep in the past week. And I think that was something that really connected with people. And that was sort of the beginning. And then I think it was very like parent oriented. And then about a year ago, I started talking about fair play, mental load, emotional labor. And I think the odd path of my career, sort of teaching math and doing an insane amount of practice problems, lended itself because I realized that I needed practice problems to understand mental load. And so I would do examples. And while I was already on, you know, making TikTok videos, I started giving examples of where I added extra mental load for my wife. And people were like, wow, this guy gets it. We should listen to him more. And people just said, hey, can you do a version for date night? Can you do a version for groceries? So I'm about 137 episodes into creating examples of where men typically add extra mental load for women.
It's interesting because I have a series, the Invisible Load series, and it's similar to yours in that it takes the invisible mental labor and makes it visible. But yours is coming from the perspective of the partner, which I appreciate because what happens a lot is I take mom's perspective, put it in something visual, and then they feel like they're often sending it to their partner. And it's still coming from like their voice or their perspective. And I'm sure that you've heard the narrative a lot where it feels like they're constantly on the heels of their partner. They're constantly reminding them and always repeating themselves. So it can be very different and land very differently when it is coming from the partner, like coming from you or a male partner versus coming from their wife or mom always. I will say that I wrestle with this. I teeter here. Teeter with me for a moment, Zach.
Teeter on.
Because when thinking about and preparing for this episode and when thinking about the voices that talk about the invisible load and gender equality and division of labor in this space and people who have had conversations with about it on the podcast, like the Eves of the world, the Eve Rodskys and people, like, I don't know. Eve's like what, a Harvard attorney, the founder of Fair Play. Like the amount of credentialing and licensure that has to be behind a woman's voice to be platformed to have these conversations.
It actually makes me tear up because it makes me so frustrated.
Thank you for your vulnerability.
I so deeply respect the work that you are doing. And I know that when you speak about these conversations from the perspective of a partner, it resonates differently.
I see nothing wrong with what you're presenting right now. It's really cool to be a part of a conversation that can bring this up, and that I don't want to speak too much here because I want you to completely finish your thought. I think there's a lot behind what you're about to say. So thank you for letting me be a part of this.
I know that your platform is needed. I know that it resonates, and I know that I appreciate your voice. And I saw your work as advocacy and it clicked right away. And I knew it, and I knew that we needed it, and I appreciated it immediately. And then on the flip side, I was also like, why does his voice get to like verbiate like further and faster than people who have been yelling this, screaming this, like rattling all the, knocking, banging on all of the doors, saying this and advocating this for, you know, years, ages, whatever. And there's just something to that for me that is just like, I don't know, I just feel that heavily right now as we're like having this conversation, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I grapple with this a lot because I think it's scary to think that the attention that I get is because I'm a man and that I'm talking about the same thing that hundreds of thousands of women have been talking about for a long time. The only thing that I think I offer differently that is hard for women to articulate, that's not even the right word, that they don't have the perspective of, is a lot of what I try to come from is I try to come from vulnerability, and I try to come from, this is where I screwed up. The Blueberry Muffins video, I don't know if you saw that one. It's currently at 16 million views, I think, across platforms. I tried to come from, this is a moment where I clearly messed up. I'm calling myself out here, and guys, this is where we are messing up. We're asking these stupid questions we know the answer to. We need to take the extra time.
Yeah.
If I'm not leading with the softness, I think, of I'm messing up and I'm telling you, guys, this is where you're screwing up. Do X, Y, and Z. If I'm coming from a place of I'm talking at them and I'm saying, I'm right, you're wrong, I know this, you don't know this, I think it lands a lot differently. And I think that's a huge reason why I make the videos the way I do. One, because I know that vulnerable messages make me better as a person and they make me more self-aware. But I think also it's the way that I need to receive it. Back in 2019, recently, Alyssa and I were having a discussion. We realized that, I don't know what article was. Maybe it was Eve's Should I Do list. Maybe it was the one that Gemma Hartley put out. But I think it was back in 2019 or 2020. She said that there was an article one of her colleagues shared with her. And she's like, oh, I wish Zach could get this. And she was terrified of sharing it with me. She was afraid that I was not going to be able to get it, that I was going to take it as a criticism, not a constructive one. And between me and her, we tried going back in the texts to find it. We're not able to find it, but she remembers like a really significant fear in sharing that. And I think I'm trying to do some more of that emotional labor that women have been doing over the years of putting down myself at a certain level. I see myself a lot of ways as a third grader teaching second graders in terms of like when I'm trying to speak to men, like, look, I'm just like maybe a year ahead of you guys in this. Mm-hmm. I'm a recovering man child. I'm not a recovered man child. I'm not an involved man child. I'm a recovering actively man child. For a long time, I anticipate there's going to be a lot of content that I can share where I'm continuously screwing up. One that I haven't written down in detail. It's just too long for a TikTok or an Instagram that I plan to write was when I screwed up last week. Literally, I've started taking sales calls for my offerings and I failed to communicate appropriately with Alyssa what my availability was at the end of the night. And I set us up for a disaster. And it was really hard owning up to the fact that I screwed up. So coming back to the feels that you're going through over there right now, it's really disappointing seeing how soft, how much emotional labor needs to be done for guys to be able to hear it. Mm-hmm. And especially when someone looks different how much easier sometimes it can be received. It's really disappointing that it's very much all the same messaging coming from a different person. So I hear you in your frustration of that.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. And it's just something that just in prep for this, I was just like feeling this like kind of like elephant in the room. And I imagine you're probably going to encounter that a lot as you enter these spaces. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to be the first or the last that is like, wait a minute. Yeah. But at the same time, recognizing that we talk a lot about healthy versus unhealthy masculinity here and how we need more examples of healthy masculinity and being able to be open and vulnerable and have these conversations and talk about embracing care work and domestic work and invisible labor and all of these things. And we need models for that. We need people who champion and sort of pioneer that and are proud of that and kind of plow that forward. And I see you as doing that, and it is necessary and needed. So it's not to take away from that because it's so necessary, but it's also understanding sort of that context, right? Of like, gah, like, you know, you put out these videos and go viral and do all of these things, which is incredible. You need a voice and you need a platform, and it makes change and it all pushes the whole thing forward. It's just kind of like a double-edged sword. And it's just something that I was just so mindful of in prep, but I think is so also helpful and incredible. So it's just, I don't know, it just kind of is so necessary and needed, but there's so much historical context here also, I think. Mm. And there's so much like a labor that women have carried, I think, that, yeah, it's just, it's, you're walking into a shit storm, Zach, and you're but it seems like you are very like humble and attuned to what you're up against. Like, it seems like you've got some advocacy sort of roots about you in terms of the work you're doing.
I'd like to think so. Hopefully you're not gassing me up too much, but yeah, I try to be humble in it because I think, in a lot of ways, as disappointing as this might be to hear this, I think for September 2021, when I was first making my content around like being a father and being that first month, and I sort of grew my first following, it was at, I think, 1,000 and went up to 50,000 followers on TikTok in a month. In those following months, in that following year, I was consistently being held to a really high standard of positive masculinity and seeing and hearing and understanding my wife. And I think I've had the privilege of having that many women calling me out, holding me to that standard that so many other guys don't have the privilege of having that sort of an audience hold you accountable to that.
Want to get smarter about your health but feel overwhelmed trying to separate fact from fiction? We hear a lot about gut health, microbiomes, and other nutrition topics, but taking the time to research these is exhausting, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. The Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast makes it so much easier to get the information you need. With the help of world-leading scientists, the podcast gives you research-based information so you can make informed choices for yourself without pressure and guilt. People are loving Zoe Science and Nutrition. Listener Stephanie's Apple review says the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is a life-changing, science-based, myth-busting podcast. That's a must-listen for anyone who eats food and wants to understand how it affects their body. With the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, you can join Stephanie and millions of others accessing quality information about their health. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Mealtime with kids can be stressful. But with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, it can be a lot easier. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. No worrying about ingredients and nutrition, no prep, no mess, and no cooking while wrangling toddlers. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor can even be tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Take the stress out of meals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/momwell50 and use code MOMWELL50 to get 50% off your first box.
It holds a mirror up to you, hey? Like, for better or for worse, like, social media can be like a devastating at times in terms of trolling and really harsh on your mental health, but can also really have some positive impacts in terms of our development, if constructive, like if not just totally harsh. It's really interesting. That's not to say that we unlearn gender norms or different things overnight, or that you're never going to make mistakes again or anything like that. But
yeah.
Can you help me understand when you first became aware of or understood the invisible load? Like, was there an aha moment, or did it just evolve in conversations between you and your partner? How did that play out?
So I think the real start of it happened as I was reading Fair Play. Laura Dinger had recommended it to me, and my other friend Abby, it's me, Abby E on TikTok, recommended it to me. As I was listening to it, one, you know, as a content creator, you're constantly searching for like what to share. And I was like, okay, this is a good opportunity. I just finished the Ruth Bader Ginsburg book. And I was like, okay, I need to eat this book in small chunks, because I think my genuine reaction to the chapters as we go along is going to be really valuable for my audience. And I remember it was the Toxic Time Messages chapter. I think it's chapter 3, where they start talking about all time is created equal, like an hour in the boardroom versus an hour with your child at the pediatrician's is equal. And I remember moments like that really struggling to adjust the thought process of the difference between like being heavily in capitalism versus like any other structure. I don't know what structure that would be, maybe a matriarchy, but I think in the current state of things, at least in America, like it was really hard to wrap my head around that one. And so I think, I don't know if there was a single aha moment. There's probably a bunch of them that I can't quite name, but probably one of the videos, I think it was last year, it was early December, I made a video, which was arguably the first of the Mental Load series. It was like a tiny little moment. It was our toddler was sick. We had been putting her down for nap with mostly water and like to get like a little bit of ibuprofen in milk. And so there was a moment where I just asked her, hey, should I give her milk or water? And I realized in that moment, I could actually make a choice and I could present that to her and she can decline, or versus like having her come up with the choice. So I could have said something more like, hey, we could do water, we could do milk. I'm thinking milk along with a little bit of ibuprofen. I'm going to do that if you say nothing. I think the other reason that I understand mental load a little bit better probably is my teaching background, is when you're making math tests for your honors students versus your lower level students, you're consistently asking yourself, how do I make this a little bit harder? So it's an honors test. And so you're purposefully creating mental load for them and forcing them to show their work. It's the difference between a 10 question open response test where they have very little like bumpers to go up against, or a 30 question multiple choice test. And what I like to say in terms of like, if I had to sum up how to address the majority of the mental load questions that guys are adding to women, I would say pretend like every question you ask her is a multiple choice test and C is automatically circled if they do nothing. I was DMing the other day with a content creator to do a collaboration. I was like, oh man, they were impressed with my work in mental load. I better show up correctly in the DMs. And I had said, I have two main ideas. This is the idea I think we should go with. And I'll make like a mock-up and I'll send it over to you by Wednesday if I hear nothing. And then I asked like one other question. I was like, damn it, I just failed to practice what I preach. And then I asked them, hey, should I send you over a script? Because we're going to do like a role play, like I talk, they talk, and then just send the clips over to each other. I was like, I just asked an open-ended question. It's so easy to, I think, fall right back into asking open-ended questions and giving people preference. And I think a huge place of where it's come from Are you familiar with the happy wife, happy life phrase that is peddled everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a lot of when we go into like wedding planning, and women typically have like maybe more wants. And I think they've been taught to dream about it as younger people. And they have a lot of, this is how I think I want this day to go. And the preferences start stacking up. And for a while, I was really proud of the fact that I was like, I chose cupcakes and bow ties and I wanted some purple. And that was it. That was what I wanted. And now as I've evolved, that was man-child me. And this is recovering man-child me. I was like, wow, I only took three things off her plate. I made those three requests and I left the rest of the mental load mostly up to her. And my mother-in-law helped a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back to like happy wife, happy life is thinking that I was making her life better by giving her the opportunity to choose all these things because she had a preference about it. And I think over time, we start practicing this too much and we think that we're adding to their lives by giving them opportunity to choose, when in fact, because we're not opting into the decision-making, we're now putting so much more on their plate.
Oh, that strikes a lot of chords in me. Let's sit in this for a minute. I think that that reinforces some interesting narratives that we want control over a lot of things, one. And two, I think that it reinforces an idea that we have decision making. Like, it gives the illusion that we have autonomy over decision making. But when you look at studies like Alison Damminger's study on cognitive labor, the things that we have the decision-making over are the minutiae of the routine and the household, and not the like big capital D decision-making things that are like, whether it's the finances or the where we go here, there, like the big movement things. So the happy wife, happy life is like, oh, you know, you want the decisions, you want the control, you want to have the say over the things that are the household and child rearing things, you know, so I'm going to keep hands off and you can have say over those areas. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, but it is the decision making piece, like the invisible labor piece that you're talking about, and the seeing and the calling it out and the videos that you make are so interesting with the, like, the what do I make for dinner? This comes up all the time in my community. Oh, what is there for dinner? What do I make for dinner? What do I give the kids? Or what, you know, what do you want them to wear? And it's these types of pieces where it's like, I don't know, figure it out. Just figure it out.
Or even worse, when it keeps going down that spectrum, do the kids need to eat?
Oh, yeah.
Like, why are we asking these things? Come on, we're parents.
Yeah. So to me, another piece of this is like, there's an ownership piece here, right? There is a default unconscious assumption of who owns the responsibility. So there's two adults in the room, yeah? Like, there's two parents, and there is a child who needs to be fed. It has not been pre-established or discussed who is meant to feed that child. But what, 9 times out of 10? How many times? I don't know. It depends on the household and the division of labor in the home. It's going to be mom. And why? If there's not ever been a conscious conversation, because of like these default assumptions that we have, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have this just automatic assumption that mom is responsible for these duties. Do you feel like you had that assumption coming into parenthood? And like, did you become aware of it going through the fair play work? I had that assumption of myself. Like, and I talk about it on the podcast all the time, how I was like, dang, I co-opted myself into this. Like, I assumed myself as the default 100% into this gendered norm, you know, mothering role as much as my partner may have. And it wasn't until I recognized it and him and I started having conversations that things started to shift, because I didn't even question it. Mm. So it's to no one's fault. Like, this is the air we breathe. I feel like we were raised, like, this is sort of, we're all defaulted into it, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I can't remember what the choice was, but I remember probably in the first couple months, there was this moment of, I think it was something I had said, like, I really think she should wear gloves or mittens or like an extra layer or something like that. It was a clothing choice. And it was like an extra precautionary choice. I don't remember what it was, but Alyssa had come back to me and said, no, like, she'll be fine with whatever. And most of the time, it's the reverse, where I'm probably poo-pooing like an extra preventative measure. And she's like, no, we're wearing an extra blah, blah, blah. Mm. And I had this moment of like, does she get to just say what goes? Is this what's happening here? Is she the default decision maker that trumps all preventative measures that I want to add in? Mm. And I remember it was a moment of like, I think I need to have my voice heard in this moment, not because I think the preventative measure is that important, but I think it's important for us to see each other as equally credible decision makers in a moment like this. Because I know historically she's been a better researcher. I'm a fantastic executor. So she'll do the research and then she doesn't want to have the human interaction. She'll find the plumber and then she'll give me the number and I go deal with him, pay him, etc., stay on top of him and try to do most of the mental after the planning and execution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think there was a lot of assumptions around that she had done the research for a handful of things around parenting that I hadn't yet. And there were definitely moments that came up and she's like, I don't know. Like, I haven't researched this yet. I ended up being a little bit ahead of her in terms of sleep training because, you know, I was on TikTok and struggling and talking about the struggles of it and ended up live streaming with a couple different sleep coaches. So I ended up being a little bit more of the conceiver of ideas and we would sort of plan them together. You know, she dealt a lot with postpartum depression and anxiety. And I think catering to that anxiety was a huge priority for us. There are a lot of moments where I think I probably could have strong-armed some decisions like, no, we're going to go this way. And I don't think that would have ended up well. I think we really were careful around her anxiety and depression. And we'd gone into pregnancy knowing that she was going to deal with those things from my history.
Mm-hmm.
I think a handful of those assumptions that we make have to do with a fear of emotions that come about like in postpartum, which is an interesting statement now that I'm saying it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a lot of fears of disappointing Alyssa that we've worked on over the years. And I think that that might be a huge part of the happy wife, happy life mantra that doesn't work. I think for us to work as couples, as partners and teams, we need to examine that a little bit closer around how we want to be making choices together.
When you are busy with little ones, managing finances can seem so stressful. Things like budgeting and remembering to call and cancel old subscriptions often fall through the cracks. But Rocket Money makes things easier for busy moms with too much on their plates. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. You can see all of your subscriptions in one place. And if you see something you don't want, Rocket Money can help you cancel it with just a few taps, which means no more trying to cram phone calls into nap time. Rocket Money even shows you your monthly spending and helps you create a custom budget and stay on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/momwell. That's rocketmoney.com/momwell. rocketmoney.com/momwell. Mom rage often leads us to feeling ashamed. But the truth is that our rage doesn't mean we're bad moms. In fact, anger is a sign from our bodies that our needs aren't being met. As moms and therapists, Dr. Ashiri Naream Psyched Mommy and I understand mom rage. We know that we all lose our cool sometimes. And we also know that with the right tools and strategies in place, those moments happen less often. We've teamed up and combined our years of experience to create All the Rage, Raising Kids with Less Anger and More Connection, a course designed to be your go-to resource for preventing and handling your anger. We dive into what causes your anger, how it impacts your body, how to reframe your thinking, and how to stay calm in triggering moments. And because we are all human, we also include strategies for repairing after we inevitably lose our cool. In honor of Maternal Mental Health Week, you can save $20 on the course with promo RAGE20 this week only. Don't miss out on your chance to save and make a positive change. Head to momwell.com/rage and save with code RAGE20. That's momwell.com/rage, code RAGE20. And I can imagine if you are sensitive to not wanting to disappoint, and if you are somebody who is maybe more sensitive or anxious and needs a little bit of reassurance, this is me, especially in a new role, and, you know, maybe needs a little bit more validation or acknowledgement from my partner or like whatever. And this could be you, this could be all types of different temperaments and different people. If I am carrying the load, or if I see my job as a good mom as being the one who has to do these things, or if I am maybe being critical of you or doing a bit of gatekeeping and not letting you like step in your full parenting role and not empowering you to like come into your fullness as a parent, I can see how that would be very stifling as well. If there's already, I imagine, insecurity as well in your own new role as a parent, it's also an identity shift for you. It's also a new role for you that you are on shaky footing in as well, right? So there are some dynamics that play out, especially when we've got postpartum anxiety at play, which we talk a lot about here, which have some move towards control or back away, avoid dynamics, especially around baby, that can kind of interfere with allowing others' involvement in things. It can create different dynamics and patterns. And I don't know, all of that influences partners' ability to interact and learn to soothe baby and their ability to build confidence, and also impacts the relationship and the partnership and stuff, right? So I think that when it comes to the invisible load and the mental load, a lot of these things are learned and anticipated, because it's like anticipating, monitoring, seeing the preferences, having the knowledge, knowing the different things that need to be done, the times that naps are, the times that snacks happen, the times all of these things happen. Is so much about being in this caregiving role. And it comes from experience and it comes from being in this role. So proximity and being in the role is such a key part of that, that if you weren't on leave, which it sounds like you did take leave, so that's a huge gift in itself to give you the opportunity to just have the proximity to be able to build that confidence in that role out the gate.
4 months.
How did you make that choice? I'm so curious what led, because that in itself already feels like it stands out in terms of choices, because a lot of people in Canada and Toronto, in where I am, they have paternity leave. It does take out of some of mom's maternity leave time, but they do have access to it. But I think like 10% actually take it. So I'm curious what went into that decision for you.
So to be a little bit clear about what leave looked like. So the first 3 months were actually paternity leave. I say 4 months, I manifested the fourth month by getting appendicitis on the very last day. And I got semi-paid medical leave for the last month. But I had been telling people for months that I was going to have 4 months. I didn't know how I was going to do it. So that's just the universe being wonky and like finding its own way to get me the fourth month. Mm-hmm, that's another story. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things I was really privileged to have was, so I worked at a therapeutic school for girls that had all been through some sort of trauma. And I think in that culture, both all the staff were very clear about the value of those early months of parenthood, because all of our students had really tough, rocky childhoods. Mm-hmm. So I had the privilege of watching one of the other teachers take her full 3 months off at the beginning of the year. And there was no question about it. There was, oh, all right, she's pregnant, won't see her for 3 months. And there was this matter of factness that I was surrounded by that made it really clear. And so I think we were paid, I think it came out to like 68% of our salaries during that time. So it wasn't full, it wasn't 100%. Mm-hmm. So I live in Massachusetts in America. I think it was like 50, 60, 70% of that was covered by the state, and then the rest of it was covered by the employer. And I think I had both the privilege of seeing someone that I respected in my work take her maternity leave, and then having those structures in place where I didn't need to take 3 months of sick time off. I didn't have to, you know, take personal days. Like I just, I was able to take advantage of something. And there was a lot of guilt for sure. It took 4 staff members to replace me, which, because I was the only math certified teacher in the school. It was a really small school of like 30 students, one subject teacher each. I had 4 classes of math and they were taught by all different teachers and staff members. So I knew that there was definitely some guilt around it, knowing that that role was going to need to be filled. I've been talking about this a bit lately around, I think there's a lot of pressure for guys to bring home, you know, the money and to have like the exterior of the house look nice. That's why we see people like on Thanksgiving when we are prepping the inside of the house, you see these guys that just don't quite get it. And they're like outside chopping down branches because they're anticipating judgment from family members around how the exterior of the house is going to look.
Right.
And then they're not seeing the dust balls. They're not seeing the dirty baseboards. They're not seeing that the windows need to be cleaned because they're not anticipating feeling judgment from their family members coming over.
It's such a valid point to make because moms, you know, when people are like, oh, I'm around the corner, I'm going to pop in, they scurry to like clean up the front entryway or like whatever because they feel the pressure because someone comes into the house and it feels like it's a reflection on mom based on these societal norms or expectations. They don't look to dad typically, but dad, like you're right. Like I've actually had like moms or people send messages like, why is it that when people are coming over, my husband thinks it's the perfect time to rake like 10 bags of leaves or something like that. But that's so interesting because he would go right to the place of like, well, the property is a reflection of how I will be perceived, given that this would be a gendered household task for him typically. Interesting.
And I think that comes back to the paternity leave. You know, if we're not earning 6 figures, like then we feel like less of a man, I think, in a lot of ways. And so especially if you're the breadwinner and like all of a sudden you're bringing home 2/3 of your paycheck for a couple months and, you know, you're struggling to pay with groceries or like you can't have your date nights out or it's a couple of things you can't pay for. I think there's a lot of shame embedded for a lot of guys in not having the funds, especially if they normally have had them. I saw this about 2 years later after doing it when Alyssa was pregnant and I was sober with her. I wore a weight vest for certain parts of it. There have been a couple of really anti-advocates for this thought. They think that I was method acting, which I don't necessarily disagree with them. But in hindsight, I didn't have the language for it then, as I think I was doing some of the emotional and the mental labor around it. So I had like a bachelor party that I went to and I didn't drink at it. And I think all of my friends that were there, like it was a beer Olympics. And so it took emotional labor for me to consider that Alyssa was not going to have an opportunity like that, that if she had a bachelorette party that she wanted to go to, which she didn't, but if she did, like that would not have been a viable option for her to drink throughout it. Back to paternity leave is just seeing the emotional labor that we are doing or not doing up front kind of leads us in a good or bad trajectory or together or apart trajectory for when the child does come. And I think that a lot of that work helped me further appreciate what she was going to be going through because I was doing my own version of it along the way, trying to make sacrifices for myself and knowing that she was going to have a really tough time. And I think most people do, but they pretend like they don't probably. And I think that helped me really normalize and not feel the pressures of society of like, my paycheck's going to be smaller and I'm not going to continue growing my teaching career for the next 3 months, 4 months. And I'm going to be a little bit stagnant versus I think that that other pressure is like guys have a lot of pressure to build their careers and staying at home is not necessarily a part of that plan.
I think one of the other things that you're talking about when you do some of the like the not drinking and the weighted vest or however is there's a piece here that is perspective taking and like keeping your partner in your mind or like trying to understand their perspective. Like there's something here with like putting yourself in their shoes or taking their perspective and seeing things through their experience, which I think is really valuable. Sometimes this is a skill that we can really lack and we can become really like us versus them focused. Like you don't understand me. You're not hearing me. You're not hearing my experience of this. And we talk over each other and we're trying to be heard and we're trying to, you know, get our point across. So there's really something to be said for trying to put ourselves in somebody else's position to hear and see and perspective take and understand what it is like. And I think that you position yourself to do that. And it sounds like with your followers and the people who are commenting and stuff, like why you're understanding this area so much is because you're perspective taking and wanting to listen. And then you take your teaching background and like break it down for your buddies and say, listen up, folks, there's some things we need to do better, right? Which we appreciate because that's what alleviates the load from us, right? And it's so helpful. And I love this series. So maybe we can wrap up with like a couple of the like best performing ones, because you said you've got like 100 and something of them now. So some of the examples of things that add to the mental load, like what have been some of the really top performing ones that have stood out?
So the top one was the blueberry muffins one, which was they had just come out of the oven and her toddler had been up in the high chair. I was feeding her breakfast and they'd come out like 2 minutes prior. They're clearly still steaming and just knee jerk question. Hillis, are these too hot to feed to Everly? And like immediately as that, I said this in the video, immediately as that came out of my mouth, I was like, wow, that was a dumb question. Mm. Didn't need to ask that. And pointed out like moments like this really create decision fatigue and putting the mental load on her. Like, I don't have to put on my parenting hat. She'll keep the parenting hat and make sure like I'm not going in the gutter. She'll be my bumper so that if I do something stupid, it was her fault. Mm-hmm. Is I think where some of that knee jerk comes from. Let's say I mentioned the one with the water in the bottle. That was the second most popular. I think the third one is someone had asked on a video. They're like, genuine question, like, why does it add mental load to ask, how can I help? And I had said, I'd just given two examples of, hey, honey, how can I help around here? And then I did like a juxtaposition. Hey, honey, I'm just getting home. I'm seeing that you're doing X, Y, and Z. I'm seeing that you're cooking dinner. I'm seeing that our toddler is playing with her blocks, but it looks like she's about to come bother you. I'm seeing that the dog probably needs to be taken out. And then giving options, kind of like that math question thing I'd said earlier, is like multiple choice questions. Hey, I'm going to go do X, Y, and Z. Or you can just go lay down because I know you're probably tired from your day too of being home with the toddler all day. I'm happy to either manage all these things or, you know, go take the dog and the kid out so you can just enjoy cooking. And the second part of that video was, oh, wow, there's a mess in here. Hey, how can I help? Versus, hey, oh, there's a mess in here. Oh, all right. There's puke on the ground. I'm going to let the dog out. It looks like you're managing the toddler, so I'll work on cleaning up the puke. Once you strip her down, I'll throw the clothes in the laundry. Let me know if there's anything else you want to do. So it's like creating, this is what I'm going to do. This is the default answer that you can decline if you really want to, but I'm trying to do at least the mental work for you in communicating what I'm going to do. And I, ideally, it's probably not a question. It's more of like, I'm telling you what I'm going to do and you can disagree. Mm-hmm. The other one that's come up a lot lately, I think, is the making a list one is like, yeah, I'll do anything you want. Just make me a list. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that one's sometimes hard to articulate the problem there. I think the first video I made about that was in July. I've probably made a handful of them since then. I've gotten a little bit better.
Yeah.
But yeah, like we can make the list actually.
Yeah.
So I hope that gives a couple of good examples.
Yeah, those are great. And I think that it really hits the nail on the head when you come in and it's like, how can I help? And it's like, do you not see? And it reinforces that feeling of like, am I invisible? Is everything I do invisible? Do you not value and care about all the things that I'm orchestrating and doing in this very moment or all day long to keep the house going? Like, I think that very question in itself can reinforce that feeling of invisibility right? That so many moms feel. I like even the question of saying, hey, I see X, Y, and Z are on the go. Like, triage parenting. What are you going to tackle? What am I going to tackle? Like, I think even if it was just like putting it out on the table and it was a collaborative conversation, okay, you go here, I go there. There's still like some decision making that has to happen, but it's like, hey, I see these things, like, go team, let's divide and conquer. Like, I think it's the seeing even often that's such a big piece of it. But so appreciate you, honestly. Appreciate you letting me grill you a little bit. And then also your gracefulness in just understanding the context of all of what you're stepping into. But I do see you as like an advocate, like you've joined forces with us. So you better get ready for a little razzing every now and then, because you're in for it as you step into these spaces.
Come on, you can't even call that real razzing. Like, that was, that was child's play. I taught teenagers for 8 years. Like, they'll let you know how it is. And I just want to thank you. This is, of a lot of the podcasts that I've been on in the past couple months, this has been one of the more potent ones, I think, because you've allowed your emotions to come out. You did challenge me, not that much in reality, but like, you did challenge me, and I really appreciated that. I think a lot of people come on and they just kind of see me as an expert. They see my follower count. They see the views that are coming out there. And I think they hear the confidence in what I'm speaking, and they don't own the space the way they probably could be. And I think you really own the space of motherhood. And like, I'm not a foreigner, but like, I'm an ally, but I'm not a mom. And I appreciated that you gut checked me on the way into being a part of this conversation.
As someone who's going to share in this space, I appreciate the work you're doing. It's important to have people doing the work who get it. And hopefully today is the beginning of more work that we get to do together. I appreciate you, Zach. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Erica.
I really appreciate Zach's understanding of my internal conflict in this episode. I am truly so grateful that he is out there doing this work, encouraging dads to recognize the invisible load and teaching them how to take responsibility and become more active partners. And I know that so many moms feel exhausted from trying to communicate this labor to their partners. Zach's work helps with that, and it's a really great thing. But I do think it's telling that as a man, Zach was able to speak out about this topic and actually have his voice heard, while it feels like women have to jump through hoops to prove their worth and be listened to. That doesn't discredit what Zach is doing. His take on the invisible load is refreshing, it's important, and it's great advocacy work. I truly love his content. It is just important for us to remember that we are still battling gender norms so strongly, both in and out of the home. I think there is something so important to acknowledge if we're going to do the work of sharing the invisible labor, or if our partners want to start taking some of these active steps that Zach talks about. And it's this idea of control. We might feel that we know best and that our partners will not be able to do what we do to our standard because of it. And in some ways, you're probably right that we know more, because we have been expected to carry this labor and build this knowledge. And if you've been the one to get up with your baby hundreds of times already, of course it feels like you are the best equipped to soothe them. You've learned how they like to be held, how they like to be rocked, and what song they like to hear. But your partner isn't incapable. They just haven't been expected to do it. They need to have the opportunities to build the confidence and capability just like you did. And that is something that might be uncomfortable and hard to overcome. But if we want to stop drowning in the load, in the little decisions and all of the remembering and being the one to pack the bag and choose the clothes and plan the meals, we need to build tolerance for that discomfort. We deserve to have the mental space to rest, to breathe, and to feel like we're not constantly drowning in mental labor. And our partners deserve to be active parents, to make decisions and to become soothers and nurturers. But if we're going to get there, we have to stop placing blame, stop building resentment, and start working as a team to understand each other's perspectives and break away from the dynamics that are in place. I would love to hear your thoughts or takeaways on this episode. Send me a DM or take a moment to leave a review and let me know your thoughts. And if you're interested in diving into more on this topic of the invisible load, head to ericajosta.com to learn more about my new book and to order your copy today. That's ericajosa.com.
I'll see you right back here, same time, same place next week, where I am being joined by my literary agent, Carly Waters, to talk about how Releasing the Motherlode, the book, came to be and all the behind-the-scenes details. You don't want to miss it. I'll see you right back here next week. I can't even begin to tell you how happy and honored I am that you choose to spend your time here with me each week. If you're looking for resources or links from today's show, or you need a refresh on anything we've talked about, visit our show notes. You can find the link in the episode description, or you can head directly to momwell.com/learningcenter. To join the Momwell email list and be the first one to know about new episode drops, insider info, or freebies, head to momwell.com/newsletter. Join me next week. Until then, remember that you have to be well to Momwell.
Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome to For the Girls podcast, hosted by Victoria Alario, for the girls who want more. Listening to For the Girls will have you ready to raise the bar, stop settling for the bare minimum, and start believing you can have it all. And step into the 2.0 version of you. You can catch a new episode of For the Girls every Monday across all podcast platforms. Until next time, girls.